is the Hearst Television Investigates podcast. Now, Chief National Investigative Correspondent Mark Albert.
Today, we're talking about election security with two people intimately involved in keeping the vote safe for this fall's midterm elections. We spoke this past weekend with the president of the National Association of Secretaries of State, Jim Condos, the chief elections official in Vermont, and Tom Hicks, chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. With a staff of about 25 people and a budget around $10 million, it's the only federal agency focused solely on elections. You'll hear both interviews, but first, our conversation with Chairman Hicks, which took place during the 2018 Election Data Summit at the Community College of Philadelphia on July 12, 2018. Here now is our interview in full. It lasted about 15 minutes.
What is the biggest threat to November's midterm elections?
I think the biggest threat is voter confidence. If voters don't feel that their votes are being counted accurately and securely, then they will not come to the polls. I feel that states are preparing really well to ensure that voter confidence remains high. The EAC is here to help states with the administration of elections. Congress did a great job of allocating $380 million to the states through the EAC to help build that confidence. And some of that confidence will be built through the cyber, what we're calling cyber grants or HAVA grants, basically allowing for money to be used for the purchase of new voting equipment, updating voter registration lists, hiring IT personnel, and so forth.
What states do you believe are most vulnerable or not yet prepared?
I think that I wouldn't say that states are not prepared, because I believe that they are all preparing for the elections. Elections happen every 2 years.
But preparing isn't necessarily prepared.
So I would say that I would still go with the same thing. So when Election Day happens, I hope that all states are prepared. There will be incidents on Election Day. Elections, every election that has happened, there's been some sort of incident where poll workers don't show up on time or so forth. So these little small things that happen are issues. So that's why I don't want to say prepared.
I understand. There are about a dozen states that have at least one jurisdiction that have voting machines that don't leave a paper record of the actual voter cast ballot. Is that a risk?
I would say no, in terms of when you say risk, because is the vote being counted accurately? And I would say yes, because these machines have been certified. These machines are not hooked up to the internet, and they allow for voters to look at their records and then cast their votes.
It would be impossible, though, to go back and do a cast ballot audit where you have a paper record of every vote that was cast, correct? You just have a paper of tallies
but
for each machine.
I would say that the way that these machines have been certified, then if we're moving away from machines that don't have paper trail, then the EAC will be there to, if they want to have those machines certified under our voluntary voting system guidelines, then we'll be there to certify those machines. A paper record is basically saying that you don't trust the, is an additional way to trust the machines and what their vote tallies are. So I believe that as we move forward, we've gotten away from the aspect of having security and accessibility, because the argument 10 years ago was that folks who don't have access to using these voting machines because of paper, then we shouldn't be using them. But I think that those two communities have come together, the accessibility community and the security community, and they're working with each other to advocate for ways to ensure that we can use paper and secure these machines so that everyone can use them.
And I think according to your data, 2016, there were about 20% or so of jurisdictions that did use these types of machines.
I'm not sure of the exact numbers, but I believe that that's pretty close to accurate.
The Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, on February 13th told Congress this, quote, "We have to inform the American public that this is real, that this is going to be happening, and the resilience needed to stand up and say, we're not going to allow some Russian to tell us how to vote." Do you agree with the Director of National Intelligence that Russia meddled in 2016 and is likely to meddle again in a future election?
I've not spoken to him about this, so I don't know what the exact quote is. I know what you've just read. But former Senator Coates, I think, is a great man and is doing a great job of what he is there for. I believe that what we've read in terms of being a foreign actor meddling in our elections is what's happened. I believe that this is nothing new in terms of people wanting to meddle in our elections, whether or not that was 100 years ago by people putting up signs saying Democrats vote on Wednesday, Republicans vote on Thursday.
Fake voicemails.
Exactly, and so forth. So those things are nothing new. The new aspect of that is that these things happen instantaneous through social media. So we have to be vigilant on knowing what our sources are, and I would say that voters, to remain confident, should do a couple of things. One, check their voter registration. Make sure that their voter registration is up to date and accurate. Two, serve as a poll worker. Make sure that, you know, if you have a question about what's going on in the polls, serve as a poll worker so you're in the polls and be part of the solution as opposed to sitting on the sidelines.
A civic duty.
Exactly. Cool.
Let's talk about the $380 million that you mentioned earlier, allocated by Congress for states to request and draw down to spend on various items that you talked about, election protection, cyber defense, et cetera. How long do states have to use that money?
They have 5 years to use that money. So,
you advise them to use it sooner?
Exactly. So we have an election in 2018, we have an election in 2020, both of those are within the 5 years. But I would say that it's up to each individual state to say, this is what we need to use that money for. I wouldn't say just spend it to spend it, but I would say spend it on what is best for your state. And we have gotten a lot of plans. I think we've gotten 15 or so plans that we hope to put up within the next few weeks to say what states are spending that money on. But also, I think that each individual state, so what is good for Maine might not necessarily be good for California. So, you know, California is getting a lot more money because of the allocation of the way that this is done on population. So I would say that the way that they're going to spend that money is definitely going to be different than the way they spend it in Maine.
But is your message, don't sit on it, spend it now?
I would say spend it well, as in don't just spend the money, but spend it so that it's best for your state.
Do you think states are doing enough to take the threat seriously?
Yes, I do. I think that states are taking this seriously like they always have.
Well, forgive me, sir. How are they taking it seriously when only half of eligible state officials have received their election security clearance from DHS that have been offered? 70% of states didn't even ask for their share of the money for the first 2 months that they were available. And as of today, only a third of states have requested the free risk and vulnerability assessments from DHS.
So I can't talk about what DHS is doing in terms of.
But those states, are the facts of what states are doing.
But states, well, I can't talk about the facts of what states are doing in terms of DHS. In terms of what they're getting from the EAC, they've requested their 97% of that money has been requested within 3 months ahead of the 2018 election. 51 or 52 out of the 55 jurisdictions have requested their money. They have laid out their state plans. They've talked to us about coming to their state. So I've gone to, in the 3 years that I've been here, 39 out of the 55 jurisdictions. We've talked to election directors. We've talked to the secretaries of state.
So what would you tell them, sir, mm-hmm. when you know that only a third now mm-hmm. have requested the risk and vulnerability assessments, half don't even have the security clearances?
So if you say, security clearances take time to get through.
Right, so about 88 of the 150 eligible have.
So, for instance, my security clearance has not come through. I've requested it, but we're working to make sure that it's done correctly.
So the chairman of the Election Assistance Commission does not yet have their security clearance?
Correct.
Isn't that a problem?
Well, we're working on correcting that problem.
When did you ask for it?
It's not a question of asking. It's a question of because I've had a security clearance, and it's a process that's moving through, I would say.
So you're asking basically for a renewal?
Right.
How long ago did you request that?
I don't know the date exactly.
DHS might want to get the chairman of the Election Assistance Commission his clearance, don't you think?
Well, we can talk to DHS.
It's an important election coming up here.
But I will say that the information that we are working on with DHS is much better this time around than it was in 2016 in terms of making sure that the information on security threats that go through DHS and the FBI, we get out to the local election officials. So me having a security clearance is okay, but
it's
I think it's pretty important, right? But I think that getting the information out to the states more so in terms of a security clearance is great in terms of getting the information in, but I think of correcting the correcting the problems is a lot more better.
Just so that I understand this process, because you know it better than I do. Just so I understand, if there was an election threat today and DHS wanted to tell the states about it, they couldn't tell you if
they
it was classified.
They could, because you can have a one-day walk-in. So it's not that I can't get information, because I have gotten information, but it's a ongoing thing. So in terms of security clearance, I have one in terms of being a one-day walk-in.
Got it.
For instance, being briefed by the FBI and other three-letter organizations, this has happened. So
maybe we'll call the DHS and ask them what the whole other.
So the permanent one—that's the one we need.
Let me move on to a couple other topics because I know I don't have a whole lot of time left. How many security alerts has the Election Assistance Commission sent out to states about the election?
I don't have the exact number, but we can get that info to you.
At the hearing yesterday before Congress, there was a question about new computer guidelines 2.0, I think, as you referred to it. When was the last time the EAC updated their computer guidelines?
The voluntary voting system guidelines were updated in 2015. It was 1.1. But I think that the overall update has not been done since 2007.
And could you pass that today?
We could not, because
we
do not have a quorum. We would need at least three votes in the affirmative for that to happen, and there's only two of us there right now.
It's normally a four-member commission?
Correct.
And right now you have two members?
Correct.
And I think just a few hours after your testimony to Congress, the White House nominated a third person to come on the commission, Donald Palmer.
Okay.
Would you call on Congress to swiftly approve that? Do you need that third commissioner by the election?
I think that the Congress will, you know, do what they need to do.
That doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement of speed or urgency.
Well, I think that, you know, if I think that the president is looking at other people to fulfill this role, and so it's up to Congress to confirm or not. So,
but we're 4 months away from the midterm elections, when the intelligence community has said the Russians may be back to meddle again, and you folks don't have a quorum, you can't pass any new policy, you're shorthanded.
I think that's a message you take to Congress.
All right, let me ask you about your budget. Your operating budget is $9 million. That's basically 2.3% of the $380 million that Congress allocated to states. Do you have enough money to do your job?
It's 10.5 is what I believe that our budget is this year.
And somebody testified to Congress, last year was $9 million. Maybe that was the previous fiscal year.
Right, that's fine. But I think that there are about 25 of us on staff doing this work, and I think that it's appropriate of what we have. We can always use more. You know, I don't think there's anyone that would turn down additional funding.
But do you have enough to protect the country's elections?
I would say that the EAC is doing what we can with the money that we have, but it's more of the state and local election officials protecting our elections.
Two more questions, if I could, please. The Secure Elections Act, Senator Lankford, Senator Klobuchar, they are pushing that through Congress. Do you support that bill?
I would say that whatever is passed through Congress, we will implement within our...
That's very diplomatic.
Because I worked in the Committee on House Administration for 11 years, and I know that there are bills that get done, and the way that they look now might not necessarily be the way they look when they're actually passed.
Got it. Final question. Senator Wyden of Oregon told Congress at the hearing yesterday in his opening statement that 44 Americans will use what, in his words, quote, insecure voting machines that make hackers and hostile foreign governments salivate. It is, in my view, he said, inexcusable that our democracy depends on such hackable technology.
44?
He said 44 million.
Oh, 44 million. Okay, 44 million.
Yes.
So I would say that...
Is he right?
I would say that the... American people are using the voting equipment that have been certified or updated by their states. For instance, Oregon votes entirely by mail, in paper. So if we are looking at updating those voting machines, then I think that that is something that would be great. We have confidence in the fact that the EAC has given out $3.4 billion to update voting equipment in the last 15 years or so.
Is it enough money?
I think that if Congress decides that they want to give us more money to help states update their voting equipment, because the Help America Vote Act was the first time that the federal government actually paid into federal elections. So,
but states have told us that $380 million this year's allocation is not enough to replace all the voting machines that would need to be replaced.
Well, I would say that there's other things that need to be done as well as replacing voting equipment. And so the EAC focuses on voter registration, voting machines, poll workers, election night reporting, so from A to Z. And so I don't think that we should just focus in on one aspect of that. For instance, in order for your car to run well, you have to have those tires working. You have to have that engine running as well. So I think that looking at all aspects of the voting process is what that $380 million should be used for.
So just to clarify my question, do you agree with Senator Wyden that 44 million Americans are using machines that, in his words, are hackable technology?
I don't know exactly what that means.
So. Okay. Sir, yeah. Anything else okay. I'm not asking that you
nope.
wanted to add?
Nope. I think that's good. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
I really appreciate
not
it.
Not a problem at all.
Thank you.
Now we'll hear from the Secretary of State of Vermont, Jim Condos. We spoke to him during the four-day annual summer conference of the National Association of Secretaries of State at the Lowe's Hotel in Philadelphia on July 14th, 2018.
First of all, the news was kind of old news. I mean, as far as what the number of states and what state it was, that was from 2016 when they had notified us that there were 21 states that had been attacked. One state was breached.
Illinois.
In fact, I believe Illinois tweeted out last night that they suspect that they are the one that they're talking about. So there is a tweet out there for that. But it's disturbing, and frankly, you know, voting is the very bedrock, the core of our democracy, and people should have the utmost confidence that the work that we're doing is to maintain that integrity of our elections process. And so I think it's important that we follow through, that we deal with the issues of cybersecurity, and I think we are.
What is the biggest threat to the midterm elections?
I think the biggest threat is probably that the Russians, as we now know, they've been explicitly identified, have and probably and will attack us again. We think that we don't know in what way. My fellow colleague from Minnesota uses the phrase that cybersecurity is like a race without a finish line. That means that we're constantly evolving because the bad actors are constantly evolving. What a bad actor did yesterday will change today and again change tomorrow. So we have to try to stay ahead of them.
Are you seeing that threat in Vermont, your state?
So to speak, no, but we do monitor on a strict basis the incoming traffic to our system, and we do know that we're getting upwards of 2 million hits a day. Approximately 800,000 of those we suspect are unauthorized attacks.
800,000?
Correct.
That's 40% of all web traffic every day to your state websites you believe could be malicious.
We believe that's so.
That's a stunning number.
It is. In fact, it shocked me because I thought it was much less than that, and I found out just in the last 2 weeks how serious a number it is. But the good news is we're doing everything in our power to stay ahead of it. And I think even if you go back to 2016, when they told us that there were 21 states that were attacked, everybody focused on the one state that was breached. Nobody focused on the fact that 20 states actually defended. And we've got the systems in place, we believe, to hold off any kind of attacks. And we will continually update, continually monitor, continually improve our defenses as we go forward.
Let's talk about that preparedness and that vulnerability.
Sure.
Do you believe that all states are taking the threat to our election seriously?
Yes, I do. I think that since 2016, we are all very much focused on cybersecurity, and we are very much focused on maintaining and improving the integrity of our elections.
I have to push back a little bit. How can that be the case that all the states are taking the threat seriously when only half of eligible state officials as of today have received election security clearances from DHS? Only 70% of states, 70% of states didn't even ask for those election assistance grants in the first 2 months. Vermont did. And only a third of states as of today have asked for free risk and vulnerability assessments from DHS. That doesn't sound like they're all prepared to me.
Let's take those one at a time. So as far as the security clearances, I received my security clearance back in February. And I think that all the problem that DHS has had and the folks that do the security clearances is the backlog. And because it actually the timing was just about right because you had a new administration coming in, you had a large influx of people.
January of 2017.
Yes.
And this is July of 2018.
Yes, but there were over 700,000 security clearances that need to be cleared.
But they've only offered 3 per state. That's 150.
Of just the states. Yes, there is a focus. I don't know what the number is today, but we just heard an update. But there is a number that has been, it has increased the number of people with security clearances. I don't know what that number is. You'd have to check with.
DHS told us on Friday it was 88 of 150
okay.
that have the security clearances, so about half.
Yeah.
Shouldn't everyone get their security clearance?
We would hope so. We have also been assured that any time that there is a need, they will give us one-day clearances to get us the information that is necessary.
We had an interview with the chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission on Thursday, and it surprised us in the interview when we asked him that question. He hasn't been granted his permanent security clearance.
That's a problem.
The only federal agency tasked full-time with our elections, and the chairman does not have his security clearance.
The Elections Assistance Commission also doesn't even have a quorum of their board.
Right. They have up to four commissioners. They only have two right now. They can't even pass any policy.
That's exactly right. And that's something that I have been very vocal about. I believe that the president and Congress needs to step up to the plate and move this these commissions through. And get that board fully staffed and fully resourced so that they can do the work that we need at the state level.
So that's why I ask you if you think we're all prepared when there isn't even a quorum on the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. They can't pass any new policies. Only a third of the states have got free risk and vulnerability assessments. Half of officials don't even have security clearances.
The part about the vulnerability assessments, I think you need to understand also that many of us have done this through the private sector. We've hired vendors. Our own state, we did ours in 2013 and 14, and we do it continually as we update our.
Every year?
As we update our IT solutions, we do the vulnerability assessment at the time that the new system is coming online. We also do penetration testing every year. And we are considered one of the leaders in the country. Vermont has just completed a penetration test recently, and it was labeled as a very mature and a leader of the pack, basically.
A private security system.
A private security firm, yes.
Do you intend to ask DHS for their free risk and vulnerability
assessment?
Well,
we do every week. We actually have a weekly hygiene scan that they do every week with us, and we have been doing it since the fall of 2016.
Is the hygiene scan the same as the risk and vulnerability assessment?
No.
Do you plan to ask DHS for?
We may, because there is no cost to it, so we may do that.
Right. Why wouldn't a state ask for one?
Again, because we've already paid for it, we've already done it. So the question is, do we need to? And we will take a look at that.
As your friend from Minnesota says, though, the threat is always evolving.
That's right.
A race without an end.
And we always need that extra set of eyes. That's why we do the hygiene scans with the Department of Homeland Security, because we feel it's good to have that second set of eyes on there.
Let's talk about the $380 million in the election assistance grants that Congress provided in March. The president signed. The Election Assistance Commission has been dispersing that. What is Vermont using its money on?
So what we've done is we're actually putting, right as we speak, we're implementing a new accessible voting system to allow, it's fully ADA compliant and will allow all anybody with a physical impairment to be able to vote privately, whether it be from home or at the polling place. We're also doing some cybersecurity work from the standpoint of our, if you want to call it our weak point, being that the town clerks who access our system, and we are putting a two-factor authentication in place. That also is right now in its final testing this week. and we hope to implement within the next week or two. So those are just a couple of things, but we also will be purchasing new vote tabulating equipment probably in time for the 2020 election. We hoped in time for the 2020 election, if not definitely by the 2022.
And the new tabulation equipment, what kind of paper trail?
Vermont has a law that says that we will have a paper trail. So for every vote that's cast in the state of Vermont, we have a ballot that corresponds to that vote.
The Democrats on the House Committee on Administration on Thursday, I believe, issued a report of the 18 most vulnerable states, as they termed it, for the election. And a big factor in their determining who was vulnerable, in their view, was whether there was a cast ballot audit trail. In other words, do you have a paper copy of every cast ballot?
Yes.
Do you believe that all states should have a paper record of every cast ballot?
That is my belief. I can't say that. NASS has not taken a formal position on it. We hope to in the next, maybe that this conference here, but if not, within the next 6 months, we should have a formal position. But yes, I believe, and many of my colleagues, as there are approximately 40 states that already use paper ballots, so, or have a paper trail. But we do believe that paper trail, paper ballot is the correct way to go. We also do a post-election audit within 30 days of the election, and our voter registration database is backed up every day.
So just so that I understand this, you believe that the states that use voting equipment that do not keep a paper record of every cast ballot should change their election machines?
Yes.
Why?
Because we think that going back to paper is necessary to protect the integrity of our elections.
And what about your colleagues that say it's not necessary?
I don't think you'll hear that.
But we have about a dozen states or so that have
yes, but that's changing. I mean, we've already got the governor of Pennsylvania, the governor of Virginia have already issued executive orders to require paper ballots. You've seen, I think, New Jersey just recently passed a bill, their elections bill, which not only added automatic voter registration, but also is changing to get rid of their DREs and go to a paper ballot system.
In Virginia, that's already been done.
Yes.
But in the other states, correct me if I'm wrong, but that fully will not be in place by November.
That may or may not be. I can't answer. This is not something that happens overnight. You need time. We all have different
pyramid roles. Can we afford to wait?
Pardon?
Can we afford to wait?
I would hope not. I think that paper ballots are really the prime example of a best practice that works.
Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon testified to Congress earlier this week on Wednesday. He referred to the states that have machines that don't keep a cast ballot record. I want to read you what he said and get your reaction if I could. He told Congress recently that, quote, 44 million Americans will use unsecure voting machines that make hackers and hostile foreign governments salivate. It is, in my view, he said, inexcusable that our democracy depends on such hackable technology.
I don't disagree with him on that.
That might rub some of your colleagues the wrong way.
It might.
You don't care?
My belief is that we need to protect the integrity of our elections, and the best way to do that, the simplest way to do that, is to use a paper ballot.
If you look at the states that have at least one jurisdiction that have an electronic voting machine that does not leave a paper record of every cast ballot, some have told us that it would cost far more than the $380 million that has been allocated this year by Congress to replace those. They're saying we don't have the money for this.
And that's a real question. And that, frankly, I was asking Congress to do more. Just this morning, we had members of the Senate Administration Rules Committee that were there. And one of the things that I said to that we needed was not an influx of $300 or $400 million every 10 or 15 years. What we need is a consistent funding source on a year-in, year-out basis, whether it be $50,000 or $100,000, just to maintain and fight the cybersecurity issues that we have. That's what we need to do. You know, think about it. When HAVA post-Florida 2000, you know, they issued a $3.9 billion grant fund, the HAVA funds, initially. This $380 million that we just received to the states was the last remaining part of that money. There was $396 million that had not been appropriated, but had been approved in the original HAVA bill, and that's what I had asked my senator, Senator Leahy, who's number two on on the Appropriations Committee to do everything he could to bring that money forward. I know that Senator Klobuchar and Senator Lankford also fought for that money as well.
They are also the primary co-sponsors on the Secure Elections Act. Do you support that act?
Absolutely.
Okay. What do states need right now to secure our elections that they don't have? Is it machines? Is it communication from DHS? Is it security clearances?
Security clearances themselves are not going to do anything to help us. I mean, the only thing that security clearances do for us is to provide additional information to us that DHS deems is a security issue. What we really need is to focus on the work that we have in front of us. That's why I think I can't speak for each individual state, but I can say that in Vermont and most of my colleagues across the country, since August of 2016, when we were brought to that conference call to be told that there were 21 states that had been attacked, but they couldn't tell us who at that time. Since that time, we have all been focused, and we're in much better shape today than we were in 2016. I believe that Vermont was in a good shape even back then because we had been focused on this since 2013, and we had done a full assessment, both physical and cyber, and completed that work in 2014. We actually put a new software in for the election system, election management system, in fall of 2015. Prior to that getting installed, we actually ran a vulnerability assessment against it. We also did a penetration test prior to it actually going live, and since then we've done penetration testing, and we do on an ongoing basis.
So in your view, states are prepared or preparing?
Both. I think most states are probably better prepared than they were then, and I think all states are preparing for the future.
You brought up before I could ask you about it, the lack of a quorum at the Election Assistance Commission. You know, I took a look at the $380 million in HABA funds, and then I compared it to the budget for the Election Assistance Commission. They get about 2.5% of that for their annual budget. It's about $10
million. That's probably true. I'm not aware of it, but I know that we got $3 million for Vermont, and we were very happy to receive that money.
$10 million for the only federal agency full-time dedicated to elections, staff of 25, no quorum. Is that acceptable?
The fact that there's no quorum, I'm not going to get into the money part of it, but the fact that there is no quorum, I think, is unacceptable.
I think he came out just hours after your testimony, hours after the testimony in Congress, he came out and nominated a third commissioner. I don't know if that paperwork has made it Donald Palmer, the former chief of elections of Virginia.
I was not aware of that, but I do know that this morning we heard from the committee the Senate Rules Committee that said that they were waiting on the paperwork. So I'm not sure where that problem is, but they're waiting on the paperwork.
Have you received any security alerts from the Election Assistance Commission this year?
No.
Would those help?
If we get any, yes. I mean, if they had any. We get ongoing alerts from the DHS and the FBI, so they will send us an alert if they see something. I mean, during the 2016 election, they had issued an alert of to look for certain IP addresses, and we ran it against our daily logs and could not find any match. We then forwarded it on to the state for their daily logs because the state and our systems are separate.
I don't mean to get into the weeds, but since I have you here, there was a Bloomberg article a couple weeks ago, and I just want to show it to you here. It says, first line of defense in U.S. election has critical weaknesses, talking about those Albert sensors
Yes.
that are being sent to states. Do you have Albert sensors?
Yes.
And do you believe that they are secure and will work?
We have an Albert sensor that is just one part, one segment of our defense system. We also have web application firewalls in front of every opening to our system, and we are constantly, the Albert sensor, if you understand what it is, it reads the IP addresses coming through, the traffic coming through the system.
It's only as good, though, as the IP addresses put into it, to what to look for.
Yes, but it's also sending it down to the CIS headquarters, and then within 15 minutes, they will notify us if they suspect that we are under attack. We also blacklist IP addresses as we learn of them, and we will continue to monitor our systems and look for any anomalies. There is no one solution to this. It's a matter of having all the different pieces in place.
Finally, you've mentioned to your colleagues, some of your colleagues have mentioned this to Congress. The chairman of the Election Assistance Commission told us that the number one thing he wants the American people to know is to have confidence in their elections, and that we can't lose that. What is your number one message to the American people?
We are working diligently every day, and it's what keeps me awake at night, thinking about whether we've done everything we can, and I believe we have. We will continue to focus, as I said earlier, the bad actors will evolve. If they couldn't get in yesterday, they'll try a different way today, and they'll try a different way tomorrow. That's why we must stay focused and vigilant on what we are doing in order to defend ourselves. Again, I go back to the 21 original states that were attacked, 20 states defended. That's a good news story right there.
But you believe they'll be back.
I do believe they'll be back. And I believe that the president has a duty to step up and let Russia know, let Putin know that this is unacceptable and there will be consequences. We can't be talking about meddling. We need to be talking about attacks on our systems. And this is an attack on the United States.
Has the president stepped up in your view so far?
No.
Okay. On that note, before I let you go, let's talk about this map and hold it up so that Kyle here can talk about it. What are we looking at? What is this?
So this is basically a three-month snapshot of the attempted scans into our system. And what it shows, the yellow line shows overall we have about 2 million attempts into our database.
Just people trying to reach your website,
just
your web
to
server.
Try to get through the website. So about 2 million scans a day. Of that, 800,000 are considered unauthorized, potential malicious, potential attacks, and we have fended off on those. You also see these spikes where it drops down. Those are the weekends. So obviously the bad actors, they work Monday through Friday.
Can you do me a favor, sir, and just with your finger, can you point and tell me what the different colors mean?
Okay, so the yellow are what we call authorized. Those are ones that we know about. Those are the ones that we know that are trying to attempt and that we are confident that they are good IPs. The red line is the address or the list of malicious or unauthorized scans that are attempting to get into our system. The combination of the two, again, is about 2 million. The unauthorized is about 40%.
40%? So that's 800,000 a day.
That's correct. And that's just in the three-month snapshot. We'll see what the next one looks like until September.
And that's just for Vermont?
That's just for Vermont.
Okay. Anything I'm not asking, sir, that you wanted to add?
No, I think just that the states, since 2016, we have all been focused on working diligently to protect our systems, to protect our voting integrity. This is something that we all take to heart. And I think we will continue to focus on it. If you look back to July of 2016, before the attacks occurred, in July we had our conference, and there was literally no discussions at that conference about cybersecurity. This past February, when we were in D.C., 75 to 80% of our conference was about cybersecurity in some form.
But there's always more you can do.
There is always more that we can do, and we will continue to evolve to fend off the bad actors.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Two fascinating conversations with Jim Condos, president of the National Association of Secretaries of State, and Tom Hicks, the chairman of the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. You can see our full report on election security on the website of your local Hearst television station, along with interactive content and video. We are committed to bringing you more coverage of the cyber threats facing the U.S. midterms right up until Election Day. Until then, thank you for listening. In Washington, I'm Chief National Investigative Correspondent Mark Albert.
You've been listening to the Hearst Investigates podcast. Have a story tip? Send it to us at investigate@hearst.com.